This is the Classic Auto Mall Show. Broadcast from the studios inside the Classic Auto Mall in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Just 1 hour west of Philadelphia at Pennsylvania Turnpike exit 298. Featuring nearly 1,000 classic, vintage, and barn find vehicles for sale under one climate-controlled roof. Now, here's your host, Classic Auto Mall president, and the man with all the toys, Stuart Howden.
Dialed in here, aren't we? Good morning. Show number 150. Here wow. We are. Good morning, afternoon, evening, whatever you happen to be.
We're celebrate.
Show number 150. Woohoo.
Yeah, it's a milestone.
Can we get Randy a clapper? You know, one of those things. Not a clapper, clap on, clap off, but, you know.
A clapboard.
A clapboard that yeah. They use. Because he has
with the stripes.
He does it, but, you know, he has to do it.
We do it old-fashioned.
Old school. Yeah. We can't afford a clapper.
Maybe we'll slip that in while he's
I think
in
that's
the
a
YouTube
great
video.
Idea. We got to get it. It's got to have a crisp plaque when it goes down.
I'm going to check the Morgantown thrift shops, of which there are many wonderful antique shops here in Morgantown, Pennsylvania.
You know, it's funny you say that. I don't normally like thrift shops. It's not my thing.
Okay.
It sounds like it's your thing.
I love it.
But the ones here have unique items. Most thrift shops you go into nowadays are Coca-Cola stuff that's remanufactured, or it's NASCAR diecast,
and
it's
knick-knacks.
It's knick-knacks, but it's not even old. It's just, but the ones here, amazing.
I'm going to give away a little secret. The one across the street has a lot of great car stuff. I can't think of the name of it. In fact, I won't get the name of it.
Thank you.
But they're next to each other. There's two next to each other.
Let me go over there and dig through first.
Sometimes I'm like, I should buy this ad and put it in the consigned car we have for their 1942 Plymouth.
Sure.
Because that'd be a cool thing to go with the car, but that's not, I'm not going to. Do that.
Spend your own money on promoting something you're going to make a commission on.
And who knows? The owner might have it already, and I don't want to
think he might be offended.
It would be a never ending quest.
You'll open up a can of worms.
That's what I'm trying to say. Pandora's box.
And if someone else gives it a new home, then you've lost your money. So
that's true. If you don't get the commission on it, then what are you going to do? How many cars do you think we have in inventory right now?
812.
No,
that's way low. It's 915.
08.
908.
Wow.
Yeah. Oh, so panic sets in.
Can we start betting the over/under? Will get DraftKings to sponsor the
absolutely.
Show or something.
Absolutely, Dave Portnoy or whatever his name is, the guy who runs that. Yeah, we absolutely. I apparently got stranded in his boat last week.
He did. I saw that. Yeah,
I saw
the other
that.
Day.
He was out with his mom and disconnected from the buoy,
right.
And then the boat wouldn't start.
Engine
wouldn't
die during.
Yeah, that's scary.
Yeah, and a rowboat came by, and I heard the whole story.
a rowboat.
Yeah. I think it was a rowboat or a kayak or something, and she had a phone, and so she called.
Did she do the 180 or 360 in the water before she just so she could? You know, we're gonna be boat owners soon.
Oh right,
yeah.
Right.
Find
yeah.
one.
Well, we found one finally. We didn't get the Don Z 22 Classic.
I'm sorry.
That I wanted with the 8.2 liter Mercruiser 454 V8 with 600 horsepower on a 22 foot. Piece of it's like balsa wood. It's so light.
Yeah, at a 600-yard lake.
Yeah, yeah.
Marriage is about compromise. So what did you end up with?
With a Chaparral bow rider. Wow. It's got a head on it.
A what?
Wow.
It's got a head.
A bathroom.
But you don't call it that if you're a.
No, it's a turlet.
It's a turlet, but you don't.
They call it a head on a boat.
That's a naval term.
Yeah, I'm sure it is. Yeah. I guess I don't know.
My brother-in-law was in the Navy.
So that was important that we have that. And a top, and some kind of top over it, a bimini type top, because the Don Z, you could get one, but it really didn't have one, and there's nowhere to lay out in the sun. And, you know, listen, again, I'm not buying a Ferrari here. I was just buying something that we could putt around on the Blue Marsh Lake area. Mm-hmm. So we bought a 25-foot Chaparral bow rider that's really cool. Red, white, and blue.
Mm.
America.
Going to put a big wing on the back?
It's already got a big, got an arch on it.
Does it?
Arch
oh, wow,
that's
cool.
Top.
Yeah. You got fired up about last week's show about Chaparrals, didn't you?
Yeah, we were talking about Chaparrals.
Chaparral the cars, and now I have Chaparral the boat. So.
Well, that's right.
So anyway, we've got to go get it, and we can't find time in our busy schedule to get away to go get the damn thing.
Oh, I'm going to have some free time. So.
Yeah, and they're almost a little offended if you don't come and actually go out on the lake with them and
go
through all the systems, which I appreciate very much. The one thing that the kid did, my kid, I don't know, he's probably 50 years old, is a great walk around of the boat. With Kathy and I were able to just sit in our office, and he showed everything. And it makes you realize that when you do a walk around on a car or a boat for somebody who's long distance, if you show every little imperfection, which you're required to do by law, not really by law, but just because you should, it seems like a lot worse than it is.
Right.
Like, it's like, oh my God, there's a scratch every 2 feet, you know, and it's not as bad as it. You're standing 10 feet away from the boat. You'd never notice any of it.
Right.
You know, so.
So this was previously disappointing.
Yeah. They say the two best days of boat ownership are the day you buy it and the day you sell it. So
same with campers.
Apparently. Same with campers. Apparently that's the thing. Cause they're, you know, they just require, the thing we'll do is we'll pull it out of the water every time. We use it. So that in of itself may be the determining factor that we don't enjoy it as much as we think we're going to enjoy it.
Because, well, I say you always invite Garrett.
Yeah. It's one thing to pull up on your, in your dock and it lifts up automatically out of the water and you get out and you go in and go home and have a glass of wine. Mm-hmm. It's another thing when you got to back the trailer down, bring the boat on, winch it on, clean it off, drain the, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Blah, blah.
I grew up on Lake Michigan and there was the Galeen River ran out to it. And I've seen many a vehicle slide back into the water.
Right.
They didn't have four-wheel drive, and somebody's got his Chevy Biscayne trying to back a boat in there.
Well, then,
it's up to the
Geo Metro with a
yeah. It's up to the back doors.
Yeah.
The natural progression here is you buying a shore house.
Well,
down
there
in,
is
down in New Jersey, and they just dock it there.
The problem with this lake is this Blue Marsh Recreation Area. It's government owned. Not the problem, but there is no. There's no lake houses. There's no boat docks on it, privately owned or anything like that. And that seems to be the case in most of the lakes around this part of the world. Whereas in the South, where I grew up, everybody that lived on the lake had a boat and a boathouse and a lift. And, you know, it was simple. You just went in and fired up and go for an hour and come back and it's no breeze. But a little bit different around here. And then, of course, you know, we look down on the Chesapeake, but that's serious watering. You know, that water in the Chesapeake is not to be toyed with. It's not, you know, just a little nice little small lake. It's a shipping channel, big boats, weather can come in real quickly. And
well, why wouldn't you go down to the Jersey Shore, which is closer, and you can just go on the intercoastal on the bays and all of that instead of the ocean?
We're not going to the ocean. We're going to go to Chesapeake because they have lots of boat docks down there. So there's like an hour from me. It's the closest boat dock area that we can get to from Morgantown. It's like an hour and 5 minutes to get there from here. So that was the attraction to it. So we wanted to do that. So anyway, sorry for the rabbit hole there.
Classic automobile boat show.
Yeah.
Yes, yes. So you ask,
where did cars go this week?
Well,
after being sold.
After being sold and paid for. And therefore.
Checks clear.
How about Columbus, Ohio, Wyomissing, Pennsylvania, Elverson, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Washington, D.C., Hot Springs, Arkansas, two times, Lancaster, Pennsylvania, Collegeville, Pennsylvania, Doylestown, Pennsylvania, Revloc, Pennsylvania, never heard of that, Leola, Pennsylvania, Brownstown, Michigan, Elverson, Pennsylvania, Toledo, Washington, Gillette, Wisconsin, Jacksonville, Florida, Dorchester, New Jersey, another Philadelphia, Pennsylvania, Stowe, Pennsylvania, Philadelphia, Pennsylvania again, Waynesboro, Pennsylvania, and Elizabethtown, Kentucky. So that was
10 states.
Yeah, but a lot to Pennsylvania. Yeah.
Yes.
It seems like more and more we're percentage-wise, maybe 60% are Pennsylvania, 60 or 65% are going to Pennsylvania, which isn't always the case. And you can pull your hair out, make yourself crazy on trying to figure out why, what, when, where, and how, because that's my nature as to why.
During colder seasons, do we tend to get Florida, California more?
We do, and it just seems to be this time of year is appropriate. It's like buying a boat. It's almost late in the season to be buying a boat, so it's late in the season to be buying a classic car if you're looking for the car shows. And speaking of car shows, which we're going to talk about in segment three or four, there is tons of them coming up.
Lots going
on. This time of year is really busy car show wise, and that's one of the things that. That's why the consignments kind of slow down a little bit. Guys are like, I'll just get one more season out of this. And then come October, oh boy, you're prepared for October, right, Steve?
Absolutely. We're ready.
We're ready.
I heard all about it.
Yeah, it gets a little crazy. So we're looking out the window here on this beautiful sunny day in Pennsylvania and seeing the Camaro Nationals being set up, all the tents. Mm-hmm. 700 Camaros expected this weekend.
Plus, we were talking about the spectators who bring their cool cars on top of it.
You'll see many of those in the parking lot.
Amazing.
Sometimes parking lots are the better car show than the car show.
If you're listening on WWDB, for example, Saturday morning, come on out to Morgantown today and tomorrow.
Yeah, today and tomorrow. Today is July the 17th. And the show is the 19th and the 20th of July. So the 20th would be Saturday, the day this first airs on WWDB, if you say it correctly, like I'm supposed to do. But, I forget and I slip into my redneck ways. Speaking of that, it was redneck weather yesterday. My God,
is that what it's like down there?
Yeah, when that's south, when you get a thunderstorm coming through, you know it.
We went to Memphis on our honeymoon in 1990. September. This is mid-September.
A little hot there.
We got off the plane. It was like, what the? This is unbelievable.
I did the same thing in Houston, Texas one time. Got off an airplane. It was like, I can't breathe. Let me have a cigarette and then figure out why I can't breathe.
I'm going to Vegas next week, next month for a wedding, mid-August in Vegas. So that should be fun.
Oh, yeah. Well, it's the dry heat.
Yeah, dry heat, 117.
Yeah, for a low, 98.
Yeah.
How do you like that? 98 degrees at night in the dark. How is that even possible?
Amazing.
So we have, as we said earlier, 908 in inventory. A little bit lighter than we've been in the past, but it's actually a good thing for a number of reasons. It's easier to get around in here. Mm-hmm. You know, when you got to move 8 cars to get to one for a test drive or an inspection, or it's going out because it's sold. That's a lot of additional work. And when we get to, 1,000, 1,100, 1,120, I think we had was the most we've ever had.
Right.
It makes it much more labor intensive to do anything around here. So as much as we'd like to have 1,100 cars in here, we're thankful when we have about 900 to 950, because that seems to be about the capacity of the layout of the building as it is.
Yeah,
right
it's
now.
Roomy. It's actually roomy.
Yeah, it feels better. And and it's especially good, like if somebody wants a video of the car just to walk around, mm-hmm. you can do it. Whereas when we were 1,100 and something, you'd still have to pull everything out.
Right.
So that it helps. So yes, please bring your consignments. We're not telling you not to. We're not telling you that we're full. We're not. I don't think we ever say no. We hardly ever say no, right?
No, I haven't even when we had 1125.
We were still
bring more.
Yeah, bring them on.
Well, it's good to have inventory. It's always good to have inventory.
Well,
right?
You never know what somebody's looking for.
That's right.
And it's hard to predict. We don't go out and buy the cars, so we're not trying to second guess the market. We just get what we get, and then hopefully we find a buyer for it.
Right.
And if the cars are priced right, then it doesn't seem to be an issue. It's when the cars, when people have unrealistic expectations on price, and that's just about as simple as I can put it. It's they're disappointed usually, because just because one sold it somewhere for some amount doesn't have anything to do with your car. Your car is today, this moment, at this location, marketed to these people. It may or may not do that. It may do less than that. It may do exactly the same as that. It may do more than that.
Yeah.
But we don't know.
There's no patterns, and there's no patterns to timelines either. So your car might sell in 2 weeks or it might sell in 2 years. It just
every car is different, too. Mm-hmm. And even though a price guide may say that a 1968 Thunderbird four-door, hardtop suicide doors with a 428 is worth, 18,000. Doesn't mean anybody's going to pay 18,000. Mm-hmm. I always tell people all the time, I say, okay. A guy will say, well, the price guide says this. I say, well, then call them and have them buy it from you. Well, they don't do that. Well, exactly.
Right.
There's no money in those price guides.
Exactly.
And listen, I'm not putting down price guides by any stretch of the imagination. It's a nice reference point for everybody, including us. We like to look at those from time to time and say, oh, yeah, that seems to be trending up or down or whatever. And so at least we have a ballpark idea. But every car is different. There's different levels of restoration. There's different levels of what's been done to the engine, professional, not professional, so on and so forth. So when we return, we'll discuss some of the new arrivals here at the Classic Auto Mall show. We'll see you in a minute.
If you're a regular listener to the Classic Auto Mall show, you know that we're really a lifestyle program that has a lot of fun with current events, music, entertainment, with a focus on classic cars. Well, this week, Stuart went down a rabbit hole and told us about his new boat. So we thought, why not give you a chance to name it? So if you have a suggestion, send it to us by August 25th at podcast@classicautomall.com. And our panel of Olympic quality judges, Stuart, Steve, Randy, and me, JR, will select a winner and announce it on the Classic Auto Mall show Labor Day weekend. The winner gets their choice of a Classic Auto Mall shirt or hat. We wanted to include a classic car, too, and if we decide to, we'll let you know. But right now, a shirt or a hat. So in the meantime, name Stuart's new boat, though we can't guarantee he'll paint it on there. And email it by August 25th to podcast@classicautomall.com. Yar, matey.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall show from the Classic Auto Mall studio in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. with our new lead-in music and lead-out. So we're really professional now.
Pot that down, man.
We really got this figured out.
Yeah, we're getting.
You're not loving Pat Travers Band?
I'm loving
150
Pat
shows. We've got it down.
We got it down. Well, sort of. Yeah, maybe, maybe not. Some of the new arrivals the past few weeks. This one is wonderful. It's a 1960 Chevrolet Impala four-door sedan. Mm-hmm. You say, well, Stuart, why would you pick that? Well, it's very cool looking, first of all. 1960 Impala has got a really iconic look to it. But this one is kind of a resto mod. It's Roman red and ermine white over black and rim. It's got a 350 cubic inch Vortec V8 with dual Edelbrock carbs. Mm-hmm. So it's feeding some fossil fuels down into that bad boy. And it's got that awesome Jet H styling and Power Glide automatic and air conditioning. And it's just a cool looking car, and it's affordable. You know, that's the thing. You know, people say, why don't you feature all expensive cars? Well,
right.
Because not everybody can afford
it. Oh, it is affordable.
Yeah, it's very affordable.
Reasonable.
60 or 59 Chevy? The cat's eye taillights or the bullets? What do you like?
I like both. I like 59s a lot. I think they are just such that cat eye look, from especially when you're following them. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. These are pretty cool. The bullet ones are pretty cool, too.
I noticed the Audi SUV has that same shape taillight.
Yep, they absolutely do. So, but, you know, one of those things that you can get into the hobby, you can fill up the back seat with your grandkids and go to get ice cream or whatever it is you do, or head down to the lake and have an enjoyable time and sharing that time with family members and friends. You know, a two-seater car, it's just you and your buddy, or you and your wife, or you and one other person.
Right.
Not, you can't go get ice cream. Well, you can. I'm not saying you can't get
bring
ice
it home.
Cream. Yeah. And it's half melted.
No, it's a great car with the fins, the horizontal fins, I call them.
And that Roman red and ermine white are a great color combination. So
plus the jet on the side. I mean, that thing is so cool.
Yeah, the Jet Age was in full force back then.
With the chemtrail in the back.
And it's under 20 grand.
Yeah. You know, it's really great. One of the best. We should do a little segment called Best Bargains or Best Buys.
Best buys.
A few here that I think are just like incredible, great prices.
I don't disagree that, you know, Harley comes to mind over there.
The white one?
Yeah, the white one.
That's a great price.
That's a great price. That thing is priced so properly, it's not even funny. I can't believe it didn't flown off the shelves, right? Other new arrivals, the 1968 Chevrolet Corvette convertible, torch red over saddle.
Mm-hmm.
Saddle being exactly what it sounds like. It's a light tan, if you will, interior. And saddle, I don't know where that came from. Probably from the horse world, I'm guessing.
Good.
I'm a thinker when it comes to stuff like that. This is a 30-year restoration.
Mm-hmm.
And you say, well, how in the world can somebody spend 30 years restoring a car? It's not that he worked every minute of every day on it.
Oh, it's a 30-year restoration. Not that it was done 30 years ago, that it took 30 years.
I don't know.
Oh.
That's now, I don't know. Now I'm questioning everything.
I can't remember that.
You wrote it.
It may have been done 30 years ago, which is not a bad thing either if it was stored properly and maintained.
The frustrating thing when you buy a car that was recently restored, I'm talking about within the past, 2 to 3 months, and it's only put a few miles on it, it hadn't been sorted out completely.
Mm-hmm.
There's always issues. There's things, or not issues, but there's things that you need to be aware of when you buy a car that hasn't been driven much. You know, we see cars that are fresh builds that have 5 miles on them. You got to make sure that you get that thing out and go through it properly, because otherwise there could be things that are going to rear their head that you won't know about.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to just be careful. It's just like with anything, you know, do your due diligence. This one's got the correct 427 cubic inch V8, numbers matching Muncie M21 transmission. It's got the hard top, and it's, of course, the first year for the C3s, which were, unloved for many years, but boy, they're not anymore.
They're not, and we have some fabulous C3s here at Classic Auto Mall.
Yeah, and Corvette Bronze is a really good color on those. That's a really, I don't like that color on many cars. It's funny about certain colors on certain cars. We were talking about this the other day. There's certain cars that red looks terrible on.
Right.
And certain cars that red is the best color you could possibly have. And then same with white, and same with just about any color. It's funny how that is. But I always liked the C3 Corvettes, because that was the era when I was starting to kind of figure out I liked cars.
Exactly.
I was 6 years old in 68.
Yep.
Actually 5 years old when they came out in 15 or 67, when you would have seen them on the showroom floors. And that was kind of, if you're going to have a Corvette, that seemed to be the one to have.
Yep.
But this one's really well done. And we'll clarify the 30-year restoration, whether it was actually done 30 years ago or it took 30 years. But when people say that it took 30 years or 20 years to complete a restoration, again, they don't mean that they spent every minute of every day on it. It was just a kind of a work in progress type
thing. And accumulating parts sometimes takes that long.
And money. And money. And having the money to do it. And you think, okay, that, you know, every month I'm going to put aside 20 or 30 or 50 or 100 or whatever it is. And if I need to buy a $100 part and I'm putting 20 away, then it's going to take me 5 months to get that part. And then another 5 months to get the next part and so on and so forth. So it's not that they were, you know, labored over this thing and have 10,000 hours in it. It's that over the time they were doing this, and people, you know, can't always afford to just go out and do a, you know, here's a blank checkbook, just go ahead.
I'm in my fourth year of my La Forza restoration, and hasn't moved an inch.
You know, we sell a lot of restorable projects to people here, and sometimes they bring them back.
Oh, really?
And they say, you know what, I haven't gotten through the first box. Uh-oh. You know, I've got through one box. And there's 22 boxes for this thing, and I've gotten through one of them, and it's been 3 years. Mm-hmm. And we've never gotten to drive the car, never gotten to enjoy it. And one of the things I always caution people is that it's cool if you want to restore a car and if you understand what you're getting into, and that's great. I applaud that. But I also say buy one that's at least drivable, that you can enjoy for a short period of time before you delve into the restoration process and find yourself with a whole garage full of parts and nothing, you know, it doesn't run yet. It doesn't drive.
I wrote up a 57 210 yesterday that is a survivor in a sense. I mean, it sort of looks like original paint. It's kind of patinaed, but it's got a good engine. You could drive it and enjoy it while you're thinking about frame off restoration.
Yeah. Or whatever level you want to go.
Piece by piece, right.
Really you do good. A piece by piece, or you do a frame off, or you do a partial restoration. It just depends on what you're looking for and what your budget is. And there's no right or wrong answer. You know, it's not people don't like some segments of the hobby, or they say, oh, that's not true, or they're damaging cars. Mm-hmm. Anytime that something gets preserved in any way, shape, or form, then that's not a bad thing.
Yeah.
You know, if a 67 Camaro with a six-cylinder in it gets traded for a 327 with a four-speed, you know, it's kind of hard to fault that person. Now, we do have some six-cylinder Camaros, first-gen Camaros that are here that you wouldn't want to mess with. They're original.
Right.
We've got the original motor, original transmission. But if something was blown up years ago and replaced with a 350 and there's no finding the original motor, then whatever you do with that car at that point in time is fair game.
Yep, exactly. You know,
because it's not original. It's not matching numbers. It's lost that value equation. So now you got to just figure out what makes sense for you.
With all these Camaro people coming in this weekend, and they've been here before. We've done Camaro Nationals here at Classic Automobile before. Do you sell cars? I mean,
Yeah, absolutely. And even this week is busy for us selling cars. Even just the week of the event, because we've lined up 40 Camaros here in the front hallway when you come in, so you certainly can't miss it. So I think we have about 50-something Camaros in inventory right now. Another 700 are coming for the show. On top of that, there'll be probably another 200 that are people that are bringing their Camaros that aren't a part of the show, just as spectators.
Right.
And then a bunch of other cool cars, as we talked about. You know, there's a lot of cool cars in parking lots of car shows that aren't part of the car show.
It's true.
You know?
It's true.
You see that so often.
Oh, yeah.
So other new arrivals, the 1956 Ford Custom Line Victoria two-door hardtop. This is Berkshire Green and Colonial White over Medium Green and Light Green. What a name. Garage kept, multiple show wins, great restoration. Got the 292 cubic inch V8 with a Ford-O-Matic tranny. And this thing screams 1950s.
Yeah.
I mean, that Berkshire Green and Colonial White is a great color, not unlike the Roman red and the other color combinations that we see. And that two shades of green interior is really funny to look at because, you know, in this day and age, you don't see that quite as much.
You don't see green. You see a lot of black.
You see a lot of black,
charcoal.
A lot of charcoal. I mean, you see white a lot, which I think, you know.
Gray, white, occasionally red, but colors are just not part of the palette, really.
What about keeping a white interior clean?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, my goodness, that's tough. I mean,
it would be. And some of these 50s cars that have white interiors are pristine. It's amazing.
How they have kept them that well. And, of course, white kind of goes with any color. Mm-hmm. Except if you were Mike's father-in-law, who actually bought a suit so ugly one time that even a white shirt wouldn't go with it. That's pretty ugly. But white pretty much is a nice palette for anything, mm-hmm. whether it's a wall in your house or a car color,
sure.
or an interior color or whatever, because it kind of any exterior color goes with it. And I love the General Motors white back in the day, which was called Parchment, mm-hmm. which is almost like an opalescent, whitish, pearlish
yep.
color. It's really a cool color.
Yeah.
And it's hard to, I don't know if it's hard to replicate. You see a lot that don't get it right, that, mm-hmm. that replace that interior with something that's just kind of pure white, not opalescent or what we like to call it. But anyway, mm-hmm. Other new arrivals, how about the 1930 Ford Model A Tudor sedan?
Mm-hmm. You know,
Ford used those at nomenclature for two-door sedans, Tudor, T-U-D-O-R,
right.
four-door, Forder, so F-O-R-D-O-R.
Yeah. It's a little confusing, actually.
It's a little confusing. So black over brown, highly original example. Got the venerable 201 cubic inch four-cylinder, three-speed manual. But this is a drivable project, mm-hmm. what we were just talking about a few minutes ago, where you can enjoy it and drive it for a couple of years, yep. have fun with it. And Model A's are cool. I'm sorry. They are so cool. They're not fast. They're not valuable. They're not. They don't corner well. They don't do anything really particularly outstanding. But they're just cool and such a representation of what the hobby is. And mm-hmm. and to go and experience a Model A and to drive it and to live with it for a period of time. You know, not as your daily driver, obviously, right. but just to enjoy it on the weekends. It's a lot of fun. And if you have the right mindset, it's like anything. I always say you can hit the apex of the corner in your minivan,
right.
you know, so same with the Model A. I mean, if you appreciate the history, you know, a 1930 Ford Model A is very close, 5 model years almost away from being 100 years old.
Yeah,
that's hard to believe.
It is amazing. And having something like that is unique also.
And know? They're not, they, you know, you think that the market was gone for those, but it's not. It's still sell.
Oh, huge. And plus the Model A Club met here last year, I think yeah. it was, and there were like 50 of them out in the lot.
Yeah, it was pretty amazing
They drove, a lot of them drove here, like yeah. from Michigan, and
that crazy.
It's incredible.
That's quite the adventure. You know, you better be, you better have your big boy pants on and some duct tape when you do that. When we return, we'll continue with some of our new arrivals at the Classic Auto Mall Show. We'll see you in a couple of minutes.
Stock number 6310 for sale by consignment at Classic Auto Mall is a restored and modernized 1959 Chevrolet Apache 3100 pickup. This truck looks fantastic covered in bright red paint contrasting with the metalwork, emblems, and chrome bumpers. The interior includes modern bucket seats, digital gauges, and an S10 steering wheel. It has a fuel-injected 5.7 LT1 Corvette intake with a 4L60E 4-speed automatic transmission and a 12-bolt rear end with 373 gears. It also has disc brakes in the front and drums in the rear to get it stopped, and a Fat Man Mustang 2 suspension in the front while leaf springs handle the back. Classic Auto Mall has more than 1,000 cars for sale via consignment in our massive climate-controlled showroom in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Classic Auto Mall's inventory is fluid and vehicles described may not be available at time of broadcast. Classic Auto Mall, a great place to buy or sell a car through consignment because it's safe, easy, and secure. Plus, we advertise, sell, and ship worldwide. Easily search for your next classic at classicautomall.com.
You are invited on a safari at Classic Auto Mall on a search for animals. Look closely and you might see a tiger, jaguar, and a cheetah or cougar as they try to catch a herd of impalas. And don't forget the wild mustangs and broncos, plus gazelle, rabbits, and rams. Instead of the zoo, you'll want to do your animal watching at Classic Auto Mall. It smells better, too.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the beautiful Classic Auto Mall Studio in downtown Morgantown, Pennsylvania, where we're getting ready for the Camaro Nationals this mm-hmm. coming week. Today would be July the 17th that we're recording. This will first air on July the 20th, 2024. We were talking about some of the new arrivals in here, and another oldie but goodie, the 1940 Pontiac Series 25 Special 6 four-door sedan, black over beige, 46,887
original. Actual miles.
Actual
yep.
miles.
Amazing.
On a car that is 84 years old, 85 model years old.
That's amazing.
Three owners, Very original. It, we got the Historic Preservation of Original Feature Award from the AACA in 2006. It's got some rare options. And it was a Greenwich Concours winner of a, I think, of a, what you call a preservation award.
That's right, in its
originality
class.
In its class. And really a neat car, and ones that you don't see often. And these are cars that are really fun to own, because if you pull up to a car show, everybody's seen a Model A, and that's cool. There's nothing wrong with that. That's why Camaros and Mustangs and Corvettes are so
popular.
Popular.
There you go.
Positive. I don't know.
The positive and popular.
They're positive and popular. That's the reason of that, because people like what they like, and a lot of people like the same things. But you pull up in a 1940 Pontiac, I guarantee you, you'll probably be the only one there. And some people like that, and some people don't.
Right.
There are, you know, different strokes for different folks.
There's also a lot of pre-war shows that are just pre-war cars, and so you might not be the only one, but this is a nice one.
But very rarely do you see these early Pontiacs.
That's true.
You know, we had that 26 Pontiac Speedster here
that
got donated to the AACA headquarters down in Hershey, and it's now in their lobby there, or it was anyway. I don't know if it's still there, but a really a neat car. And it's, you know, some people like the individuality of having a 1940 Pontiac over a 1938 Ford or something that was maybe, I mean, the amount that they build of 1940 Pontiacs versus 1940 Fords has got to be exponentially different.
Like
hundreds of thousands different.
For sure.
But this one's really neat and very original, and it's something that you probably should just buy and not mess with.
And if you have kids or grandkids, the back seats of these things are so much
they're
fun.
Huge.
It's like a playground back there. I would love to be a kid again and just
put a sandbox back there.
Yeah, it's just amazing room.
And last but not least, the 1966 Chevrolet Nova hardtop, willow green over fawn and brown. This one was garage kept, long-term ownership, 350 V8. Really kind of a subtle muscle car.
Yeah.
You know, it's got you can tell it's cool and it's got the rake and the stance, but it doesn't scream muscle. But this thing will go. I mean, these things are, and it's Power Glide 2-speed automatic. They're pretty simple and basic transmissions.
Yeah, if I remember this one right, it's a pretty low option car.
Yeah.
So it's pretty plain Jane on the inside. It was probably a daily commuter for somebody. And now it's just like you said, it's just like a subtle stance, hints at muscle with a great simple interior.
Sure. You know, we were talking about cars that were simple and fun to own. JR brought us in a window sticker from a Vega from 1970. Or I guess it was. Wasn't it JR74?
You know, well, that's one thing I don't know. And it's not a 17-digit VIN, so I don't know how to look it up. So I don't know if you could suggest to folks, if they get something that, you know, my parents got it in the late 70s, but it might be a 78, could be a 77. I don't know.
Well, I would think that more than likely, most of the Vegas were built between 70 and 75. Five, maybe.
I think that's it.
I think 75 was it, with like the Cosworth Vegas were, which were the performance versions of the Vegas. But there are sites out there, and there are sites out there where you can decode these VINs. And of course, Justin, who works for us, is our spec writer, and he's memorized most of them, I think, by
pretty
now.
Much.
I think he's even has to look them up. But he can tell you the codes for all these and what the year and the make and the model and what the... And some of them go deeper into other options, engine, things like that,
colors.
Yep. Some of them don't have that. Some of them also have, in addition to the VIN or vehicle identification number, is a trim tag.
Mm-hmm.
And the trim tag might tell you what the color of the exterior and color of the interior. It might even tell you some of the options, air conditioning or some of the more prominent options.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason for all this information is because they needed to know when it was going down the assembly line what to put in it. And that's why there were build sheets that had codes on there. And that's why there's also codes on these trim tags and also decipherable or decodable VIN numbers on these cars. And they weren't even VIN numbers before 81. They were serial numbers. They didn't become a true vehicle identification number until some models in 80 and 81 was about as early as they were. And you can't find much on an 80, 81, 82, even an 83 car. As you get 85 and newer, you can find more and more. And what I mean by that is by doing a Carfax or a VIN data check, where you're actually checking the history of that particular VIN number, where it was, where it's lived, where it was sold, where it was serviced, if it's ever been in an accident, all that stuff. People will call up all the time and, you know, on a 67 Camaro and say, can you run a Carfax on it? Well, no, they didn't start till when they became VIN numbers, as opposed to just serial numbers. And the problem with the serial numbers back in the day, especially if you get back in the 30s, is that they might be a five-digit number. And it's all, you know, it's 117283. And you go online and you look that up on VIN data, which tracks the history through the National Motor Vehicle Association that tracks all the vehicles. And it might say it was comes up stolen. And it wasn't stolen because that same serial number was on a Kubota tractor in Poughkeepsie, New York. And that happens. And so how we're going to fix that, I don't exactly know. I'm sure somebody's already had a problem with it. So it's something to be aware of. And when you buy a car, check the VIN number on the title against the VIN that's on the car, not just on the paperwork on the car, but look at the title. And walk up to the VIN number. And if you don't know where it is, go online and find out where it is. Because they're not always in the obvious place, which is the left front windshield dash area, where you can look in from the outside of the car and see the VIN number. Now, some of them can be on the frame of the car. Some of them can be on a plate on the firewall. Some of them can be in the glove box. Some can be in the door jams. I mean, there's lots of different places. But check that, because we have so many cars. I'm not exaggerating, that show up that the VIN's wrong.
Yeah.
It's off by a digit, or the, you know, the five is an S. Or...
I'll give you an example of that. I was looking for my Trans Am. Not long ago, we can get into that story another day. But I posted an insurance card. I had all this paperwork from the Trans Am. And the one piece I posted was an insurance card from 1981 or whatever it was. And as soon as I posted it, somebody said, oh, no, that VIN is completely wrong. It should be. And the digits were wrong. And so, I mean, I didn't know.
Yeah.
And so I found another document that had the accurate thing, but it can be wrong, especially on insurance stuff.
Well, what happens is a lot of times if you've got a clerk at a DMV and they're typing in 1,000 titles a day and they type in, you know, they type the 8 before the F or the F before the 8 or an S is a 5 or a 0 is an O or 8 is a B.
Human error.
Yeah, human error. And that happens. But the good news is if you check it, then you'll know. But most people, I'm talking about dyed-in-the-wool car guys, have never, ever checked their VIN, including me.
Yeah, well, it's a lot of numbers. It's a lot of little numbers. Yeah,
state, how could they make a mistake?
Yeah, no, I can't.
Of course.
Never.
So it's important to do that. So when you buy a car, one of the first things you should check is check the title, check to make sure that it does match what's on the car itself. And it doesn't. You got to deal with it then, because the worst time to deal with a problem like that is you've sold the car to, you know, your neighbor, your buddy, a stranger, and everything's great, and they bring you the money, and you give them the title, and they go to the DMV, and they check it, and they go, well, this is wrong, and then now there's a problem. Now it sours the deal, and it happens to us from time to time.
Sure.
We've gotten better at really doing due diligence on serial numbers, VIN numbers, whatever we can do to find out, because this happens too. A guy will get a title for his car. And this is from the 70s. And early 80s, he starts looking for the title and can't find it. So he goes to the DMV and applies for a lost title and gets a new title. In the meantime, years go on again. It's in the 90s, and he time to sell it, and he gets the old title, the first title, and brings that, forgetting that he's gotten another title 10 years ago. And it's not the newest title. And so then you take it to a DMV, and the DMV says, there's a newer title than this. We can't honor this. So you have to really pay attention to all these things. It's very important. And titles to cars, there's reasons that people put those away in safes and you know, places that they can be protected.
Absolutely.
So back to the Vega.
Yeah.
It's a Vega Camback L4, so that's got the fast 140 cubic inch Chevrolet motor. I don't even know what size motor it was. But I love the fact that you could get the deluxe bumpers for $22.
Yeah. My dad spent the money on that. He did that. He bought the Electro Clear rear defogger for $52, and the big option here, variable ratio power steering, $95.
Huh. How about list price for the car? Base price was $2,622.90.
Yep.
Out the door, without dealer installed options or accessories, state or local taxes or license fees, $2,839.90. Can you imagine being able to buy a brand new car today for $2,839.
No,
you can't.
Buy them for $28,000.
You can't buy a dirt bike.
Is the equivalent for $2,600 today? In today's money, it's got to be like $25,000.
I was by Lowe's, and they have like rugged golf cart type things.
Yeah.
They were $10,000.
Exactly.
I mean, I looked at like 125 Honda dirt bikes, you know, motocross bikes, and I remember you could buy them. I bought my first Yamaha MX-100. In 1974, and it was $400 out the door.
Wow.
Brand new. Now they're like $5,000 for a dirt bike.
Yeah, I bought a Sears motorcycle that was like $175 or something.
I gave my friend $50 for a Honda 50 back in the day.
Yeah, 50 for a 50.
Yeah,
50.
He's like, take it.
Yeah. But there were so many no cost options on this vehicle. It was quality stuff.
Oh yeah,
foam filled bucket seats.
How about padded instrument panel and sun visors? Because, you know, when you don't have your seatbelt on and you go flying into the dash, you'd like some padding there.
But it did have a seatbelt reminder system.
Which were so annoying back then.
The buzz. Yeah, the buzz.
Oh, it was terrible. How about they had an outside rearview mirror?
Oh, that's
like,
good.
That should even be an option.
No, but it was. And on the driver's side, I believe, that doesn't say passenger side.
That was extra.
Have you ever driven a car with the mirrors that are on the fenders?
Oh,
and you can't adjust them. So you had to get out to adjust them. And it's...
one of the cars had a Chrysler had one where you could adjust. They had cable control. Yeah.
Cars are, you know, bigger than they look. You can't tell where you are or what's going on and all the blind spots. And that's the problem with these new cars where they have sensors that tell you that somebody's coming up behind you and you better not be switching lanes right now. And then you get in a car that doesn't have them and you forget that you're in a car that doesn't have them. You start to just, well, it'll tell me. Woo! You know, and before you know it, you're turning into
When you have multiple cars, it's hard to remember what's what.
First
world problems.
The other day, I turned the windshield wipers on when I was trying to put one of the cars in gear because it's like some are on the stalk, some are on the dash, some are a knob, some are, you know, will it to happen. Please go into gear, go into reverse. The problem with the knob, the little turny knob, is if you're backing out into traffic and, you know, if you're in a shifter on the column, you put it in reverse, you know, you can feel where it is, you back up, down into drive, you go. Same with on the console, you know, you put it, you know where drive is, boom, you're in it. That knob, you're like, well, semi is bearing down on you.
No,
anyway.
No tactile feel.
Yeah, exactly.
Last option, backup lights.
Backup,
not option, included.
Wow.
I made that Vega a deal.
Kind of Chevrolet to do that, wasn't it? When we return, we'll continue with our inane conversation about Vegas.
Of course.
Classic Auto Mall Show. We'll see you in a minute.
The Classic Auto Mall has more than 1,000 vehicles for consignment in our huge 8-acre climate-controlled showroom.
It's a real indoor mall.
If you'd like to know all the advantages of buying and selling a car through consignment, the information is available on our website, or you can talk to a classic car specialist who can answer all your questions. It's easy, safe, convenient, and it doesn't matter where you are. We sell worldwide. See our huge selection of classic and collectible vehicles at classicautomall.com.
And we're back with the Classic Auto Mall Show from the Classic Auto Mall Studio in beautiful Morgantown, Pennsylvania.
That song threw me off. Is this show 151?
Yes. Didn't you know we're starting? He's doing some filler because he's misplaced something.
That's good. No, it works.
It's all right.
It works.
I like it. I love that song. I love the intro to that song. That's one of my favorite songs, and that's why we picked it. I don't. I would be hard pressed to pick a song I didn't like for the opening of my show.
It changes everything. I used. Sammy Hagar. What is Sammy Hagar song? I can't remember.
I Can't Drive 55.
It may have been Highway Wonderland.
It seems a little, you know, cliche.
It was cliche. I think I used Trans Am.
Trans Am.
Yeah, that's good.
I think it's better.
Another good song to use would be Cars. Gary Newman.
Yeah. In Cars.
There's a million of them.
Yeah, there's a lot of great car songs out there that are obvious and some are not so obvious.
Yeah.
There's a great. Talking Roger Waters, the pros and cons of hitchhiking, and he talks about his green Lamborghini. And then you hear the green Lamborghini V12.
I just learned about an Alan Jackson song called Mercury.
Yeah.
I hadn't heard before. I heard somebody do a cover of it. And then I was writing up a Mercury, and I thought, let me look at the lyrics and see if I can. It didn't really work. I found something better. But interesting song.
Or as we say in the South, Mercury.
Mercury. That's
Mercury.
Right. Well, he said it like that in the song.
Of course he did, because he is Alan Jackson. He had a heck of a car collection.
Did he?
I think he sold most of them. I think he's been in ill health. I don't think he's been well. You know, and talking in the last segment, we were talking about titling cars and VINs and digits and stuff, and kind of one of the topics that I've written an article on for the AACA magazine and other places is registering your collector car and paying your taxes. And this is so important. And what happens is, especially if you buy a car out of state. So if you buy a car in Pennsylvania and you're a Pennsylvania resident and it's at a new car dealer, then they're going to issue the title and tags and everything is going to be transferred into your name immediately. But if you buy a car from out of state or an older car and you're responsible for taking your paperwork to your local DMV to pay your taxes and and get your tags and all that good stuff, which we don't do here. We're not a full service tag
right.
service. So you have to go somewhere else to get it done. Guess what? A lot of people don't go. Oh, they put it off. Well, I'll get to that next week. And next week becomes 2 weeks and 3 weeks and 4 weeks and a month and 2 months and 6 months and a year.
Yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. Or they go, I'm not going to pay the taxes on this thing. I'll just drive it around. I've got an old tag here in the back, you know, of something that used to be on grandma's, you know, whatever. And we'll just put it on there and nobody will bother us and it'll be fine. And then come to sell the car or bring it to us and it's got an open title. So it's in somebody else's name. They've signed the back of it, but they haven't reassigned it to anybody else in front. And then good old days, that happened a lot. You could, titles would go to 15 or 20 people. Nobody would ever register it. Nobody would ever pay the taxes. Nobody would ever do what they're supposed to do. And it didn't matter. I mean, the poor guy who owned the car in 1940, and it's now 1980, and he gets a call saying, you know, is your insurance going to cover this accident we had? And the guy's like, I sold the car 40 years ago. To a guy who's dead, so where's, you know, how am I still on the title? Well, because people didn't go and get a title. So, I mean, I remember seeing five and six owners and from a car title from 40 years ago, and it was still an open title. And, you know, you throw an old plate on it, and away you go.
Yes.
And those days are long gone. You can't do that anymore.
Right.
And not only can you not do it, but it creates a liability issue for the seller. Mm-hmm. And so for the guy who owned the car before you, you put him in a very precarious position if something were to happen or if the car was used in a crime or it was in an accident or stolen or fill in the blank of whatever else. And, you know, of course, law enforcement doesn't look kindly on that anymore when you don't have a car that's not registered with the wrong tag on it.
Right.
You know, again, this is not 1970 when you can just slap a tag on there and nobody really cared. They didn't have computers. They didn't have any way to really follow up. That looked good. It looked right. Your name is Joe. Okay, we got it. But
and another reason for not doing it yourself and having not just Classic Auto Mall, but other people in this type of business help you.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, think about it. I mean, something happens. Who pays? You know, who's responsible? Who's financially responsible? And by law, you're supposed to have your car titled within, I think, 20 business days, is it in Pennsylvania?
I thought it was 30 days.
Maybe 30 days.
Yeah.
20 business days, whatever. But and check with your own state rules and regulations, including Pennsylvania, because I'm not exactly sure what that time frame is. But there's no reason to hesitate and delay it. And the other thing is that I can't give you a bill of sale for less money than you paid for the car. I'm sorry. I don't know who you are. I don't know why or what, but we just, it's bad business. I'm not going to lose my dealer license because you don't want to pay
it's
taxes.
It's fine between two private parties, but when
whatever they do.
Anyway, you can outsmart the government is good, but legally. I'm not an anarchist, but I'm just saying.
That was Steve talking. He lives at 101 East Main Street.
Because you know, the laws and regulations are there for a reason. I mean, you could get a huge fine for not registering your car and or for falsifying what the amount that you paid for it. So just suck it up. Factor it into what you're doing when you buy the car. Realize that you're going to pay 6 or 7 or 8% or whatever it is in your home state. Or maybe you're in a state that doesn't have it. Or maybe you have an LLC in Montana that you don't really pay any taxes on cars. Mm-hmm. It's a dealership / LLC.
Yep.
The problem is that if you're driving your car around in your neighborhood, after a while, the police are going to say, you know what? We've seen you around here for the past year driving on Montana plates, and you're not in Montana. We're in Kansas, Ethel.
Yeah.
And so they've started cracking down on that a little bit as well, too.
Also, if you're consigning a car, make sure your name is on the make sure the title's in your name.
In your name.
We've had that situation happen.
Most of the dealers now are not giving you the paperwork to take to your state. Like they say, long story short, I'm going to start with a short story.
Right.
We happened to buy a car in Indiana. They had to handle the paperwork.
Yeah.
And send it off. And they went over 90 days. My temp tag is out. I'm on the phone every other day. Where's the plate?
Right.
Where's the title? Where's the title? Didn't you get it cleared from the lien holder yet? What's, you know? And it got to be a real hassle. That case, I would have taken it with me and dutifully registered it.
Sure.
But they dragged their feet getting it to me.
My recommendation, especially if you buy from an individual and you're both from the same state, is go with that individual
100%.
To the DMV and make sure he's registered in his name so you don't have any liability, So the state knows that you sold the car. They're not going to charge you any taxes. You know, if you don't turn in your plates in Pennsylvania, they keep and you cancel your insurance, you're going to get a letter that says, hey, we don't know that you don't own this car anymore.
Yep.
And so it's very, very important to do that.
And in Pennsylvania, you can go to a tag place. You don't have to go to the DMV, right? You can go to a tag place and get all the paperwork done. They can pay the taxes right there and be done with it.
And we live in a litigious society anyway. Mm-hmm. People are suing over anything. That's so true. Don't give people an opportunity. Do it right. Mm-hmm. Suck it up. Do the right thing. Get the car registered. Pay your taxes. Have a little extra for if you decide you want to fix something or put wheels on it. Don't go into this thing and spend every penny on the car and then realize I don't have enough money to pay the taxes, you know, or I don't have enough money to put a new set of wheels, which is what I always wanted or I dreamed about or whatever it is.
Figure that into the cost.
Yeah, you really got to do that because and make sure that there's a paper trail for everything. An open title is not a paper trail.
That's right.
You know, you got to have a bill of sale, even if it's just, you know, my name is Joe, and I sold this car to Pete, and it was this, and the VIN number is this, and we signed it on this day.
Yep.
Better than nothing.
That's right. And if you can get it notarized, even better.
Even better. That's you can do that if you go to any one of these DMVs.
That's right.
You know, and that's what I said, I mean, more than anything, is that, you know, make sure that you can check with your DMV if you sell a car. It's not a bad idea to put a reminder in your phone or your calendar that says, you know, after 4 months, check with the DMV and make sure that that car is not still registered in your name. There's a lot of pitfalls in this hobby and business, and we're not trying to discourage you from it. We're just trying to explain to people why it is, why our services become so valuable. Because we go through all this and we do all that and we do all the due diligence to find out whether this thing is legit or not, or if there's a problem. Right. But the last thing we want is for you to get to your DMV and there's a problem. And it happens, even with our due diligence.
Yep.
Some DMVs don't honor certain things, and we don't know that. I don't know what North Dakota does. I've never been to
North
Dakota.
Every state's different. That's right.
They are. That's a profound statement.
I'm just trying to put a period on it.
You want me to stop talking?
No, just put a fine point on it is what I meant to say.
Gotcha.
I've been, say, South Dakota is, I believe, in a Native American name for a lot of nothing. North Dakota is the American Native name of a whole lot of nothing.
A whole lot of nothing. A whole lot of love.
I still want to go.
I do, too. I still want to see it, so... I mean, you know, you could get a Dakar edition Porsche 911 to go there because you could go off-roading. And seen the Dakar edition where it's lifted and people are just out there tearing up in sand dunes and brand new Porsche.
Yeah.
I took one of those photos on this road where it just went off into the distance and it was just flat for
gazillions. Yeah. Unbelievable. Well, you know, Porsche's slogan. There is no substitute.
There is no substitute. No,
that was in the movie Risky Business.
It was 928, gold 928.
That's right. I was reading in the Rob Report, not that I read the Rob Report, la-di-da. The Rob Report, because there's a lot of interesting car stuff in there. And the Peterson Museum is featuring the world's most famous lowriders.
Oh.
That's really become a accepted culture in the car world, where it was looked down upon for many years. And people thought, oh, that's just, you know, guys being stupid and jacking up their cars. And, you know, the cars go up and down and they have the hydraulics on them. But there's a reason for that. You know what the reason is?
No.
Because they couldn't pass the state inspections with the cars lowered like they like to do back before they came up with the hydraulic system. So now they could raise it up, go get the inspection.
No.
Now they're within compliance.
I thought it was for clearing speed bumps.
Well, there's other reasons that came from that. But,
interesting.
You know, the lowriders started in the 40s, predominantly Mexican-Americans in Southern California.
Sure. And they put a lot of money into those cars.
Oh, my God.
Chrome and paint and everything.
Yeah. And in 1959 is when they saw the changing of the ride and the height to pass the inspection. But I love the Peterson says that the tagline for the show is best in low instead of best in show. But these things, I mean, the Gypsy Rose was added to the National Historic Vehicle Registry, and there's a wonderful picture of it in front of the Capitol in Washington, D.C. It's an amazing car. I mean, you may not be something that you would own or want to own, but if you look at the level of quality of workmanship on some of these things, it is absolutely unbelievable. And they have great names. One guy did a 68 Cadillac Eldorado that's at the Peterson called Heldorado. And of course, you know what? This is great. And the show runs through 2024, spring of 2025. So if you get a chance, go see it. It's really amazing. But, you know, it's funny the difference between hot rodding and low riders back in the day. Hot riders were interested in going fast, and low riders were focused on low and slow so the cars could be seen.
Yeah.
Now, that was their whole thing. They wanted to go slow so people could see. And then, of course, you got the greatest song, you know, ever by low riders called Low Rider by War.
Yeah.
All my friends know the low rider. The low rider is a little higher. The low rider drives drives a little slower. Low rider is a real goer. Bow, 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 bow. That's about the only singing you'll hear from me. I guess we didn't talk about anything else going on.
Well, speaking of shows, though, I want to mention, if you're listening on WWDB, Doylestown at Dusk is this evening. It starts at 5 o'clock, and it goes to about 9 or 10. So come on out. I'll be there with the Typhoon and say hello.
The Typhoon will be there. And we've got, like we said, the Camaro Nationals today. It will be ending here. Central Pennsylvania Auto Auction this weekend as well, too. Meekum Auction is July 24th through the 27th in Harrisburg. Pittsburgh Vintage Grand Prix, mm-hmm. July 26th through August the 4th. The Radnor Hunt Concours, which yours truly is on the board of, 6th through the 8th of September. Carlisle, Audrain, Hershey, I mean, they're all coming here. Yep. They're just coming whether we were ready or not.
Awesome.
Anyway, we'll catch you next time on the Classic Auto Mall Show. We'll see you next time.
You've been listening to the Classic Auto Mall Show with your host, Stuart Howden. Executive producer, Steve Saphir. Produced and engineered by yours truly, J.R. Russ. Available on ClassicAutoMall.com, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. Questions, answers, or comments? Write us at ClassicAutoMall.com. And if you want to talk about buying a classic car seen on our website, you're looking for a particular vehicle, or want to consign your classic for sale, write us at info@ClassicAutoMall.com or call and talk to a real live classic car specialist at 888-227-0914. That's 888-227-0914. Music courtesy of the Pat Travers Band. For tour dates, contact, and stuff, visit pattravers.com. Produced by Car Smarts Media. Copyright all rights reserved. Classic Auto Mall has more than 1,000 cars for sale via consignment in our massive climate-controlled showroom in Morgantown, Pennsylvania. Classic Auto Mall's inventory is fluid and vehicles described may not be available at time of broadcast. Classic Auto Mall, a great place to buy or sell a car through consignment because it's safe, easy, and secure. Plus, we advertise, sell, and ship worldwide. Easily search for your next classic at ClassicAutoMall.com.